André Dubus III grew up in mill towns along the Massachusetts-New Hampshire border. He began writing fiction at age 22, just a few months after graduating from UT Austin. Because he preferred to write in the morning, he took mainly night jobs: bartender, office cleaner, halfway house counselor, and even as an assistant to a private investigator. André has taught writing at Harvard, Tufts, Emerson College, and UMass Lowell, where he is a full-time faculty member. André is the author of 5 books. His novel, House of Sand and Fog, was a fiction finalist for the National Book Award and an Academy Award-nominated motion picture. Today, we're going to speak with him about his most recent book, his memoir, Townie. Welcome, André. Thanks so much for stopping by the Book Report.
Thanks for having me, Elaine. It's nice to be here.
How and when did you begin to write?
Oh, it's a long story, but I'll get to it. I began to write when I was about 21 and a half, 22 years old. I was a kid who got beat up a lot growing up, moved a lot, lived in kind of first world poverty, and I snapped and became a fighter and a pretty violent, angry kid. And one night, and in one way to control my violence, I actually started to box. And one night, instead of going off to the gym to box, something I still can't pinpoint but makes me believe in, frankly, the divine, made me sit my butt in a chair and write a scene. And I just felt so alive and awake, and I felt, you know, more importantly, I felt more like myself than I'd ever felt. That I've been writing 5-6 days a week since because of that feeling, and that was, you know, 30 years ago.
You described Townie as an accidental memoir. How so?
Accidental and reluctant. Well, I was working on an essay, in a collection of essays to deliver to my publisher. And because I love the personal essay as a form. And the essay I was working on was kind of fueled by the question, how did I miss baseball? I love baseball now as a grown-up, so why didn't I play it as a kid? Why didn't I even watch it? And, you know, I know why. You know, we most of us really know the story of how we got to where we are now, but just because we know what happened, I maintain we don't know really what the hell happened. You know, and that's one reason we go back in the memoir and we go back in our memories. And so I began to write this essay about baseball, and 500 pages later, I wrote what I was doing instead of playing, you know, sports with balls in them. I was living with my mom and 3 siblings after she divorced my father, and living pretty low income, and living in tough neighborhoods, and you know, that's how it started. And you know, for years, I've been trying to write so much of this as fiction. And I finally came to the conclusion after 3 separate attempts, Elaine. I don't exaggerate, I think, when I say that probably out of the last close to 30 years of fiction writing, I probably spent 8 or 9 years trying to write all that stuff that ended up in Townie as a novel. And I just couldn't do it. I was too close to it. And more importantly, I think, I realized that I'm not the kind of writer who can write fiction from my life. One of the things I love about writing novels and stories is you get to be someone else. And I felt hemmed in by the facts of my life. And so writing Townie, it felt really artistically freeing that I finally found a way to talk about growing up in the early 70s, you know, Vietnam ending, Nixon taking off in his helicopter, no dads around, a lot of drugs and alcohol and sex too young, and I finally found a way to write about it.
Your book is so gut-wrenchingly honest. How did your family react to it?
Oh, man. I have a hitman out front waiting. No, they were wonderfully, surprisingly generous. I mean, they just... well, my younger sister, Nicole, has told me that she's not going to read it. And nothing personal. She said, I'll read your fiction, but I just, it was a lousy childhood and I don't care to go back. And I completely respect that. My brother Jeb was incredibly generous. You know, I was particularly worried about him because I wrote a bit about his own demons. And in order to write more honestly about my life, I discovered I had to write more honestly about my family's, which was the most difficult part of writing this. And he said to me, man, he said, well, André, I'd never want to step on anybody's tube of paint. You know, my sister was equally generous. My mother was, oh, so beautiful. She actually said, she said, you know, Andre, I was, you know, I'm driving, and we're driving side by side, and I'm trying to explain to her that I'm written this memoir, and I have to be really honest about my memory of how she kind of just was holding on by her fingertips as a mother, but I didn't want to hurt her or make her look bad in any way. You know, I love her, and I honor what she did do, and she said, well, she reached over, she said, "Don't you dare." I go, "Oh, God, it's too late." She said, "No, don't you dare not write anything because of me." She said, "You write your story." She said, "You know, that's your story, and you have to write it." And she said, "Besides, I'm so old, I just don't give a shit what anyone thinks about me anyway."
Well, man, that lady had grit. I mean, yeah. Their story's so tough.
Yeah, and you know, my wife and I have talked about this. If I were really a wealthy guy, I would set up a fund just for single mothers raising their kids in poverty, which is millions and millions of women and kids. And she was one of them. She, you know, and also one of the things I discovered in this accidental memoir, Townie Elaine, is that, you know, my family was also from a social class we don't really talk about much in this country, which is they were educated. They're from the educated working poor. They were both educated. They both had jobs. But, you know, my father made about $12,000 a year. My mother made about $10,000 a year. And they just never had enough. And I think there are a lot of people like that, educated but broke.
Especially now.
Especially now. It's happening even more.
Your dad passed away before the book was published, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did. I don't believe I could have written it if you were alive, because so much of what surprised me about what came out of that story, that remembered story of my youth, is his absence in our lives became a huge presence in the book. And I actually realized that I was, you know, more fatherless than I ever consciously accepted.
You come from a really literary family. When you do some digging in the family tree, there's a lot of people there. Talk about that.
I think it's in the water or something. Yeah, man, my dad, of course, is a beautiful short story writer, Andre Debuse, and his first cousin is the 2-time Edgar Award-winning master crime writer James Lee Burke with his 30-something books. And then his daughter, Alifair Burke, just published her 7th book. And then my father's sister, Elizabeth Nell Debuse, published 5 historical novels. And her daughter, Delaney Michelle, is coming out with the 3rd book. And there are actually more when you go out from that immediate family.
And as a kid, you actually knew Kurt Vonnegut.
Yeah, Kurt Vonnegut, actually, I didn't know who the hell he was. He was just this tall guy with curly hair who, in Iowa City, when my dad was at the writer's workshop and my parents were still happily married and in their 20s, he would come down, walk down from his house up the street and come to our house because our grandmother bought us a little black and white TV, and every day we watched Batman at like 3 o'clock. And there'd be this Uncle Kurt guy chain-smoking cigarettes right beside us on the couch and watching Batman. I remember one time, I put this in the book, you know, I remember vividly him looking down at me once and asking me who my favorite character was. And I said, you know, False Face? And he says, "I like the Riddler." And he kept smoking.
Wow. I watched a YouTube interview of yours, and you said you love addressing audiences. You love reading excerpts, but you love the Q&A the most. What's a question that you've never been asked that you really wish you could be asked?
You know, Elaine, it's a great question. That's a great question right there. Here's my answer. I can't think of a question that I haven't been asked or that I would want anyone to ask. And mainly it's because I try not to think too much about... Here's what I'm trying to say. I try to be so in the moment and so completely there in the room with whoever is there when I'm in front of people that I don't think about the conversation before. I don't think about it after. My favorite part of that Q&A is, especially with the huge book tour of the memoirs, you just get so tired of yourself. You get so tired of your damn book and your little depressing story and your stupid name. And so I just take refuge in other people. Tell me about you. So what do you do?
Well, hardly depressing really at the end, because, you know, you're such a fabulous man now.
Oh, well, thank you. I don't know if I'm a fabulous man, but it's one day at a time.
How was it for you to narrate your own audiobook?
It was fun, and I didn't think it would be, because because I was tired of my book. I'd already edited it so much, and it had been about 6 months since I looked at the manuscript. But I was really grateful to have those 10 days in that studio with this guy. Really, with the audio company, I really got to like this young guy. Was my director, tech guy, and distance between finishing the last period of the last sentence, and so I was really allowing myself to see it with new eyes, which is the heart of revision. So it was too late to do anything about it because it's already a book. So I was allowing myself to just go on that journey with this kid Andre, and you know, frankly, it was fun to do the accents. You know, like, you know, Northern Boston, where I'm from, they all talk like this. Elaine, how you doing, honey? Nice. Hey, that's a nice thing you got there. What's that? Cost you a lot of money there? So it was fun, you know, doing that.
Okay, so what's next for you?
Nothing. I'm not working on a thing. No. You know, one thing I'm going to talk about tonight with these writers is this whole notion of the writing, being a writer being versus being an author. And I'm very grateful that I'm an author, which means you publish things. But what I love about writing is writing. So I write 5-6 days a week all year long. And right now I'm working on a book I'm trying to finish by Christmas. And it's well, I don't, if it goes longer, it goes longer. But it's kind of a... It's a collection of vaguely linked novellas that have to do with, you know, being middle-aged and married and middle-aged sex and grown kids and growing kids and hurt feelings and changing bodies. And, you know, I'm trying to listen to William Carlos Williams and write what's under my nose, which is, you know, middle-aged people. Although I will tell you, the latest novella, which is an unusual title for me, but it's 97 pages long, and I finished it a few months ago, and it's called Listen Carefully as Our Options Have Changed.
I love that.
Postmodern for me, but go ahead.
Right. Well, your book is so moving. Readers, absolutely pick it up next time you're in a bookstore. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Elaine, thank you. I really enjoyed it.